honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, wrapping up our two-part conversation with Dan Doherty, 98 years old, of Fairfield, California, originally from Austin, Minnesota. Dan played a little college basketball there in Minnesota for Carleton College after coming home from World War II. One of the items that made it home from Europe with him was a double-barreled shotgun that a German baroness had surrendered to the young American. And when we left off, Dan had mentioned that decades later, he felt compelled to try to return that gun to its family of origin.
Well, I write to Munich City Hall, and I remembered the address of the home and the name, and I remembered the name of the girl across the street. And Munich wrote back with a bill for $8 that they couldn't find any member of the family, but they found the girl. And so I wrote to her, and she writes right back, and she says, The fellow you want is living in the house. He's now married, has three children. I write to him. He was 5 years old living in the house when we were there. I don't remember him, but he was there. And I write to him and I say, I have your grandfather's shotgun. If you'd like it, I'll mail it to you. He said, like it? Well, come and get it. It's a very affluent family. His wife was a doctor and he was a professor. And they've traveled all over the world. And the next summer, they flew to Denver and hired a car and then drove all through the Southwest and came up the California coast to Marin, where we were living. And we had a return of the shotgun party. And my wife had a very nice occasion. And they put the shotgun in their suitcase and went home. Well, this last April, I'm invited as a guest of the Germans to the 78th anniversary. And so I write to the von Schaffenberg that we're coming, and they say, well, come to the house. And so there are nine members of our family in our group. And that night we show up, and it's Wolf's 83rd birthday. And he occupies the second floor of the house, and his son's family has the first floor. And we had a very lovely evening with them. They got out the shotgun. It's still there. We showed it. It's all rusted shut. No, you can't even open it up anymore. But our kids established a very nice relationship with his children, and I'm sure they're going to continue that through the years. So a little bridge of the generations.
So you got to sleep in the same house that you had slept in?
We didn't sleep in the house, but we had a party in the house. We were staying in a hotel in downtown Munich for three nights, and then we stayed in a hotel in Dachau for four nights for the 78th. We were invited to the 75th in 2020, and the 30 members of my family and friends were going to accompany me. And we had 20 of us in the family had reservations afterwards to have a week's trip on the Rhine, and that was April of 2020. Well, in March, COVID hits, and at the very last minute, everything got canceled. All those reservations, everything got canceled. And so I understood there were about a dozen of us liberators who were going to be there in 2020. I had been asked to speak at one of the programs. So when kind of a surprise, when in early this year, we got an invitation and there were only two of us showed up, two liberators, one Bud Gauze from the 42nd Division and myself, and about 15 prisoners. One of the prisoners is from Calistoga. It's an hour from here. He's a year older than I am. I'll be 99 this year. He'll be 100. And he's been back to several anniversaries. And he went last year, and he's going again with his son this year.
I guess the question is, why is it so important? You know, why does this matter so much that you would travel back across the world to be there for an anniversary, to keep this history alive. Why do we need to understand what happened then and remember it?
Well, Dachau is historically very important. In the course of 12 short years, Hitler's agents systematically murdered 21 million innocent men, women, and children, including 6 million Jews. And the SS was a large part of that. It's one of the largest organized criminal gangs in the history of the world. And Dachau was the first camp to be organized. When Hitler took power, Hindenburg was still president. Hindenburg, and Hitler was chancellor. And the Reichstag fire happened. And the Nazis blamed the communists for it. And Hitler got Hindenburg to sign a decree that gave the state virtually unlimited power to just abrogate civil liberties and rights. And Hindenburg signed that, and the Nazis used that to begin the roundup of the opponents of National Socialism. Mm-hmm. And they started rounding them up all over Germany, the socialists, the communists, Jews, Catholic leaders, Protestant leaders, and it just flooded the jails of Germany. And they started opening camps. And in Munich, Himmler, head of the SS, had been appointed police president. The Nazis, one of the first things Hitler did was put Nazis in charge of police wherever they could. Himmler opened the first concentration camp at an old abandoned powder factory near the town of Dachau. It was a mile away. Today, the town of Dachau is built right up to the camp. It's quite a lovely little village. But it represented the first effort. The first four prisoners killed at Dachau were Jews. When we liberated it, less than 10% of the surviving prisoners were Jews. Most of them were, the largest group were Poles. Every ethnic group, nationality in Europe, including 6 Americans, were at Dachau. And so, going there, when you think of it historically, it was a big part of my life, and a big part of the tragedy that was the Third Reich. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time since the war on the question of how is it that the most educated, most religious, most churched country in the world could produce and sustain the Third Reich. Mm. And it's a very difficult question. And I've spent a lot of time reading about the SS in the 1990s, I just ignored the war up until the 1990s, but a fellow interested me in going to a reunion of my regiment, and I went and I continued to go. I got really interested, and I tracked down 75 guys who had been in C Company. That took a big effort. I made hundreds of telephone calls across the country. I put out a newsletter for them, and I got a lot of very informed people to write articles about interesting things that happened during the war, and I have all that, and I've still got a lot of contacts from that. And the result, I've educated myself about the event and our participation in it. And as far as I know, I'm about the last member of C Company. But we don't know, because when we were all discharged, we went our separate ways. Some of us ended up in the Alumni Association attending reunions, but most of them didn't. And somewhere out there are some of these guys. I have a computer that does a weekly Google search of the name Dachau. and it picks up anything where Dachau is mentioned in print, newspapers and college papers and stuff. And so I look at that every week, looking for maybe see some of the obituaries of C Company guys or some other guys that are honored. And I've made some very interesting contacts through those.
Well, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think I hear an undertone through all of this that you've invested so much of your later years in learning about this and connecting with others who were there. Is that driven by a motivation to make sure this isn't forgotten, and even worse, that people don't try to deny it happened?
Well, I don't worry about the deniers. This is the most documented. The Holocaust is the most documented crime of the millennium, and there will always be kooks out on the margins, but up against all the documentation. I don't worry that. I think this is my efforts, I think, is my way of my emotional involvement in the fact I realized that coming up on that train was one of the real big events of my life. We lost, my wife and I lost a 12-year-old son in the 60s. And, you know, losing a child is just a devastating experience for parents. And later, I was talking it out with a therapist. I discovered during that process that I was still carrying some baggage about the corpses. And I talked that out and cried on the couch about that. I think that's one reason why I can talk about it. Now, there are guys that say, oh, it's so bad I can't talk about it. Well, hell, I can talk about it. But I think it's probably my contribution is to just to know as much as I can and put as much together. And I'm still trying to put things together. I just found one of the newspaper articles was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about a Holocaust survivor who was on a death march that left Dachau 3 days before the liberation. And they were found below Munich. Well, I knew that a unit of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, the Japanese-American group, had come upon that. And so I wrote to him. I wrote to him about something else. But it turns out that that march was made up of 2,000 Russian prisoners and 2,000 Jews. And his part of the march, when it ended, they came upon American tanks with Caucasian GIs. But when you read the 442nd, it's really the 522nd Field Artillery Battalion, when you read their account, he said they came upon the Russian prisoners at a little different village, just 2 kilometers. Wait, but it was the same march.
Yeah.
And but it's a very interesting story. And the Holocaust Center in Milwaukee is very interested in it. And those are the kind of things that keep popping up. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for the contributions your family has made for our freedom. And thank you for doing what you just told us about, for keeping this history alive and educating the rest of us. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you think is important for us to know?
No. I think we pretty well covered it. Yeah.
Is there something as you look forward to your 99th birthday that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Well, my resolution when the start of this year was to make it to 2025, because then in that year I'll be 100. So right now my new goal is to make it to 100, but we'll see. My wife will be 98 next month, February, and I'll be 99 in May. And we don't drive anymore, So it's not as easy getting around as it used to be, but we're still in pretty reasonably good health.
And we're going to pray it stays that way for Dan and Norma Doherty as they approach those upcoming birthdays. And we'll look forward to celebrating that milestone century mark for Dan in 2025, which will also mark the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Dachau. Again, if you'd like to read some of Dan's extensive writing about his company's experience there and the connections and developments that followed, you can visit hometownheroesradio.com or pull up the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.